From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop, and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, October 24th through Friday, October 28th, 2022. It was a week of heavy-duty politics as the midterm elections are less than 2 weeks away and early voting has already begun, along with a changing of the guard at Twitter, continuing COVID concerns, tumult and tension in the world, racial reckoning on the LA City Council, more crime and gun violence, the continuing escalation of prices, and the Astros and Phillies getting ready for the World Series. Welcome to the pre-Halloween edition of our show. Get ready for a powerful hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, we've got righties, and we've got fence sitters. Please don't get angry. Just listen closely, and while doing so, maintain a degree of educated skepticism, regardless of whether or not you agree. Here at the Michael Harrison Wrap, we are equal opportunity offenders, united against the idiots who threaten to destroy our democracy. We'll be joined by Kevin Casey at Talkers, Dom Giordano in Philadelphia, Mark Davis in Dallas, Holland Cook on Block Island, Dr. Dahlia Wax in Las Vegas, and Brad Shepard in Springfield, Massachusetts. Influential yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices, sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do a daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world where we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap. Heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations across the U.S. and the U.K. The past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information is gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. This installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is brought to you in part by the rock group Gun Hill Road, in which I'm a member, and our provocative music video titled Idiots. Check it out at idiotsvideo.com. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, the executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, please give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about topics on talk shows across America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, science and technology. There was talk this week about everything from the James Webb Space Telescope to new information about the future of driverless cars.
Ford and Volkswagen announced that they're pulling the plug on their autonomous vehicle joint venture, Argo AI, which had failed to find other investors and is shutting down its operations. This is bad news for the future of driverless cars, at least for the near future.
At number 9, a three-way tie between abortion, LGBTQ rights, and climate change. The subject of abortion was a hot topic in the high-profile Senate race debate in Pennsylvania between John Fetterman and Dr. Mehmet Oz.
It's also a big issue in the Georgia Senate race between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock.
At number 8, COVID-19 among general health issues. U.S. Senate Republican staffers issued a report this week arguing that the most likely origin of the coronavirus pandemic was some kind of quote-unquote research-related incident in China, citing safety lapses in laboratories there, specifically in Wuhan.
Meantime, we're hardly out of the woods as medical authorities warn this winter might produce a dangerous viral triple-demic, the flu, coronavirus, and RSV, which stands for respiratory syncytial virus.
At number 7, a tie between race relations and immigration. The outrage in Los Angeles continues over the city council leaked racial slur recordings that resulted in the resignation of its president, Nuri Martinez, and Los Angeles County Federation of Labor president, Ron Herrera. And now there's a movement afoot to have a special recall election to oust city councilor Kevin De Leon. The brouhaha is fueling tensions between the city's African-American and Hispanic populations.
All while the Los Angeles police conduct an investigation to determine if the recording and leak of the nasty remarks were legal. It's illegal in California to record a confidential communication without the consent of all parties involved.
At number 6, crime and guns. Urban street crime is one of the top voter concerns right after inflation, driving the coming midterm elections.
And it doesn't bode well for the Democrats. Meanwhile, there was yet another school shooting, this one at Central Visual and Performing Arts High School in St. Louis, where a 19-year-old armed with an AR-15-style rifle killed two and injured multiple others.
At number five, Elon Musk and Twitter. Elon Musk has taken ownership of Twitter in a $44 billion acquisition. One of the first things Musk has done as owner was to fire several of Twitter's top executives. Other staff cutbacks are expected.
Regarding the free speech issue, he tweeted, "The bird is freed," referring to Twitter's bird logo, in an apparent nod to his desire to see the company have fewer limits on content that can be posted. But he also told free speech purists that he doesn't want the platform to become an echo chamber for haters. In an open letter to advertisers, Musk stated, "Twitter obviously cannot become a free-for-all hellscape where anything can be said with no consequences."
At number four, the Russia-Ukraine war, British politics, and foreign affairs. The fear of escalation continues to grow as Russia suffers massive troop casualties and the coming cold winter begins to set in.
In the UK, a new prime minister, billionaire Rishi Sunak, has taken office, replacing Liz Truss as the nation tries to restore a stable economic keel.
At number three, Trump legal issues. The pressure on the former president continues to build with all the issues at play. Mar-a-Lago, January 6th, election tampering, a defamation lawsuit, and a tax fraud investigation, to name a handful.
Can Trump survive this ongoing grind and hope to mount a successful campaign for the GOP 2024 nomination? The jury is still out on that burning political question.
At number two, the economy. Inflation tops the list of voter concerns driving the coming midterm elections.
And polls indicate a growing segment of the electorate hold the Biden administration responsible for the ever-increasing cost of living. On the bright side, the economy showed a bit of growth in Q3, but probably not enough to calm fears of a recession.
And at number one this week, politics and the midterm elections. The Pennsylvania Senate race between John Fetterman and Dr. Mehmet Oz topped the list of talked about political items in the national conversation this past week.
Of course, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, Florida, New York, Ohio, and numerous other states across the nation are heating up as both sides say this election is about preventing the other from stealing American democracy. Now that's an unnerving thought for the independents out there who find the conduct of both parties dangerous and despicable. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Politics and the rapidly approaching midterm elections are at the top of the heap in the national conversation. Pennsylvania is one of the nation's hotspots in this regard. Dom Giordano of WPHT, the Dean of Philadelphia radio talk show hosts, has a bird's eye view of the situation. This week's debate between Fetterman and Oz kind of caught the nation's attention on a number of reasons, from policy to politics, but also the whole issue of his stroke and its aftermath. What's been the reaction, you know, in terms of the people in Pennsylvania and your callers, and what's your take?
Well, the reaction has been that they thought, on one hand, this was a pretty telling thing. Michael, it's hard to believe that he's not impaired pretty significantly at this point. But there was regret that, my regret, and I think the listeners too, we wanted to see a different kind of thing from the moderators. It was fine to talk about abortion quite a bit. We wanted them to talk about the secondary big issue, crime, personal safety, and Michael, fentanyl. This would have been a good opportunity. A lot of America saw this. I know you've talked about it. I've talked about it. Pennsylvania, one of the three or four worst states around this, it gets into the border. It gets into crime, and it also gets into the issues of how do we deal with this in an appropriate way? We're spending a gazillion dollars. Why can't we get better treatment? So I don't like these debates. I like to see them let the candidates go back and forth with each other more. And I think that cut against Fetterman, it was pretty fast paced, more than I thought. I happen to believe he should have dropped out. And if he had done it in the middle of August was the due date, they could have tagged someone else in. At this point, voters are going to be forced to make the choice. Does this really impair him as a senator? And that gets into, will he get better? And two, the issue of, if he doesn't, can you operate as a senator this way? I wanted to see more policy. I believe Fetterman is very radical, particularly on the crime issue, et cetera. I wanted to see if he could stand his ground and debate Oz on that. And I wanted him to go after Oz on some of these other issues that he always brings up in a way that would be fitting for him. Sadly, he can't do that at this point, and he may not be able to. So that's where we are. It's an incomplete at this moment.
Do you think the issue is more that he is, and I know that you're not a psychiatrist, you're not a psychologist, and you're not a doctor, but do you think the issue is that the impairment gets in the way of his ability to communicate, or the impairment gets in the way of his ability to think? And that's
right.
crucial, I think.
Yeah, that is a great question. And of course, our own ideology plays into it, certainly. I have to think what I've seen there, that it is an issue that impairs his thinking at this point. And here's what would settle it. And if I were one of the moderators, I would have drilled down on this more. He will not release the full medical records. And look, I believe in privacy. We all have our own medical issues. But if you're going to run to be the deciding vote potentially on this, we need to hear from the doctors, Michael, people that have been on that are nonpartisan, bipartisan. His own doctor is not a neurologist or cardiologist. It's believed that he has underlying heart issues that are severe. And then the neurologist, I think the public ought to see exactly the level of this. And then voters could make a better judgment on this. So if he won't release them, what are we to think? And my answer is that it's more severe because they've kind of covered this up all along. It brings the issue up to the great issue. Has the media been in the tank to try to cover this up? And I think they have. The evidence that NBC woman Bush did a great job of actually telling viewers of NBC News National what she experienced with Fetterman. And we actually saw it. And for that, sadly, members of the media on the national level, many of them have attacked her. It's almost shocking. She did a great service here, I think, to let it. That's the first time we've seen it and had an observation about how he can't function without the closed captioning.
Do you think that it could have an opposite effect because Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz, is not that popular a person or a candidate? He's got his own personality and baggage issues. Do you think it's possible that people will vote against him and for Fetterman because they feel sorry for Fetterman and they don't want Oz under any conditions?
He has Oz, high unfavorables, without a doubt. But I thought either his TV presence, his personality, Michael, he really skewed toward the suburban approach. He was calm. He didn't bring up the stroke, the illness in any way, shape, or form here. The other factor is a lot of people are seeing Fetterman's wife, I think, go overboard in the protective stuff here, and they don't like that, just like the president and whatever the difficulties are there. There's a backdrop. I think Biden hurts Fetterman here. The point I would make broadly is this, two things. One, I happen to think how this is playing out with Fetterman might even hurt the perception of people that have been stricken with something, because over the course of time, they can get better. We know that. This is pretty soon. And the thing I resent with the president is, look at Bernie Sanders. He's 83. He's had a heart condition. And yet, to my eye, the guy seems to be energetic. Even I differ with him completely, energetic on top of things.
Yeah.
Biden just happens to be a guy approaching 80 that is an older 80. There are a lot of people today, given modern science, nutrition, exercise, and just Bernie Sanders' spirit, that are perfectly fine at that age. I think he's actually helping to create an ageist perception. And Fetterman, I don't think, is getting the sympathy vote, because people that were supportive of Fetterman, I think, were early voters, mail-in ballots and the like. I don't think it's going to cut that way. He is raising money, though. $2 million after 3 hours, a lot of it out of state. That might be because they see that Oz's momentum is there. And I think you're going to see people vote against Fetterman rather than for Oz in the decisive manner here. You're right about the unfavorability rating of Dr. Oz.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We have four people out there in the public arena that are approaching 80 or past 80, and they all have different images in terms of how people would look at the elderly, to use a term, in public office. You got Donald Trump, you've got Joe Biden, you've got Nancy Pelosi, and you have Bernie Sanders.
And I think Sanders looks to be among the more energetic and riled up and passionate, because on his side of it, it's what he believes. Trump, somewhat because of the image he's created, I think doesn't look in the same class. And Nancy Pelosi now, I wouldn't say it in the past, seems to be fading a little bit. I think that could be, she senses this might be her last time in actual power. But Bernie Sanders is a perfect example of what people can do. Heart condition 83. And if I were just voting on vitality, I could vote for Bernie Sanders.
That's radio talk show host Dom Giordano of WPHT in Philadelphia. Coming up next, a visit with Texas talk radio legend Mark Davis in Dallas. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Do you sometimes get the feeling that our society is being overrun by idiots? Do all the stupid, dumb things people say and do make you crazy, 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 crazy? If so, the new song and video by Gun Hill Road is for you.
Idiots walk among us.
They're lazy, lazy, lazy.
Idiots talk among us.
Their speech is often hazy.
Idiots talk among us.
Never ceases to amaze me.
Idiots talk among us.
Tries me crazy, crazy, crazy.
Crazy, 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 crazy.
It's called Idiots. Check out the video. It's free. Idiotsvideo.com. That's idiotsvideo.com. That's idiotsvideo.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Talk about hotspots in the American political scene. The great state of Texas is indeed prominent and influential in the national conversation week after week. I caught up with legendary radio talk show host Mark Davis of 660 AM The Answer in Dallas on my podcast this week. Here's an excerpt from that conversation. You've written a couple of books in your time, and one of them is called Lone Star America, How Texas Can Save Our Country. Tell us about Texas saving our country.
So I came back to my native Texas, an opportunity to come work first for WBAP in 1994, and I had just the most wonderful run. It's just glorious. It's all been great, and the cylinders are all running. And then I come here into the Salem property at 660 AM, The Answer, in 2012. A couple of years after that, the good people at Regnery Publishing, which we had a real close relationship, so close that we eventually bought them, an editor from Regnery calls and says, there's a book we'd like to market. There's a book we'd like to put out. Could you write it? And it was basically, and I remember this is about 2014, Texas was very much in the news. Rick Perry is governor, about to give way to the Greg Abbott. You know, Texas is always in the news. Everybody's always talking about Texas, how much they love us, how much they hate us. We're always very front of mind. So they said, if we gave you a premise, and that premise is that Texas ideas are so good, are working so well in the Lone Star State, that the entire country would do well to follow its example, could you write that book? And I said, give me 3 months. And I did it. And it was Lone Star America, How Texas Can Save Our Country. And it's I think a lot of it's held up pretty well. It's generally an idea about how conservative governance is attractive, how doing things the way we have done it is the reason why people are tripping over each other to move here and escaping California like a sinking ship. So I was very, very proud of that. And then 2 years later, Regnery kindly took an idea that I had. I said, let's take a look at all of these things that I argue against, all these liberal ideas that I say are terrible. But let me do it with a sense of grace and good humor and kind of provide an issue-by-issue conversational guide so that people who read the book can have a way to respond when someone says, you know, that Obama's the greatest president ever, or we don't really need borders, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that came in the form of Upside Down, How the Left Has Turned Right into Wrong, Truth into Lies, Good into Bad. Sounds pretty combative, but it's really just kind of a conversational guide for conservatives on how to arm yourself with a few facts and a few good attitudes and argue for conservatism in a positive way.
What advice can you give anybody listening to this who is in the media and may feel they have a book in them and are, thinking of someday writing a book? What are your insights into the state of book publishing and being an author in general as a professional pursuit?
Couple of things. When you have an idea that you want to pitch, make it something that is at least somewhat different than what everyone else is doing. If there are already 10 books in the last few years that make almost exactly the same point that you're making, the marketplace for it is not likely to sprout. It doesn't mean that you can't take a look at something that seems to be a burgeoning trend and sort of piggyback onto that. Maybe you want to be, one of only a few authors talking about something maybe the best thing I can do is give an example. Here's something, if I weren't doing something else, here's something I might do a book on right now. So everybody can take this and, give me a finder's fee if this is an idea. The tyranny of experts. Everywhere there's a story about, experts say this about COVID, or experts say this about election misinformation, or experts say this about some subject, when usually the expert is so full of it and really just somebody who might have a degree in something that some media outlet decided to use because it forwarded their agenda. The tyranny of experts is something that maybe an author can turn into a 250-page masterpiece about how the notion of expertise has been corrupted. And when you hear about an expert, you have to really look hard and see if the person really is an expert or just flogging a political point they want to make. That's something that people have been saying for 5 or 10 years, but maybe a good, solid book that goes and finds some good examples and documents them well and offers up that message in a readable, entertaining way, that might be a path towards success.
That's radio talk show host Mark Davis of 660 AM The Answer in Dallas. If you'd like to hear the entire conversation from which that clip was excerpted, please click on my podcast at mhinterview.com. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Now, let's head up to the Northeast and pay a visit with media consultant Holland Cook on Block Island, right off the coast of Rhode Island, whose ebook, Inflation Hacks, Saving Those Benjamins, has been helping folks deal with inflation. Holland, I'm glad you're back on because the economy continues to be not only one of the top issues on the Talker survey, but as we get closer to the midterms, it is one of the top issues on the minds of voters. And obviously, people are concerned about making ends meet. And in your book, Inflation Hacks, Saving Those Benjamins, you describe discounts that many people who are entitled to don't take advantage of. Could you give us some examples?
Well, here comes another winter, and in much of the country, we live in fear of the dead battery first thing in the morning, and everywhere, nails await. You could get a flat tire. So a lot of us have joined AAA. What you don't realize is how much money they can save you, and if you go to AAA.com, you can peruse discounts on tickets to concerts and games and movies and amusement parks, including Disney World and Universal. You can book a hotel room at a good rate and keep scrolling. I see discounts at Office Max, Omaha Steaks, Samsung. I even found a deal on airport parking at AAA.com. And if you are a member of AARP, same thing goes for you. And if you're not a member, you should be, no matter how old you aren't, because what a lot of people don't realize is there is no minimum age to join the American Association of Retired Persons. Certainly their mission is to advocate to Congress for people who are 50 and older, but you will quickly recoup your $16 annual dues with all the discounts that you will find on the AARP website. So these are discounts that you may have overlooked if you are a member, and these are discounts worth membering up if you aren't.
That's very interesting. First of all, I'm still getting used to the idea that we don't call them ARP. Remember, it was, ARP. Are you a member of ARP? And I knew a lot of people that didn't want to join the the group once known as ARP, because it meant you're old. Oh my gosh, I got an invitation to join the AARP. Am I
there? They have great rental car discounts. Put your pride aside.
But I had no idea. I had no idea that you could join at any age.
They have to restock the pond because there are fewer and fewer of us ambling around these days.
In other words, there's a whole new crop of old people being made.
Yeah,
which is something I've always wondered about with radio formats. And you're a radio consultant. Is they say, your audience is getting old. Well, aren't there new old people always? I mean, they don't close the high school when the 12th graders graduate. They bring the 11th graders up. I wonder.
Yeah, it's all about relevance. As you said a minute ago, inflation is biting us all. And I appreciate you having me on again. Because every time you've had me on, I get more suggestions on the blog. So I don't pretend to be the expert myself. I am really just using talk radio to gather great ideas. And every time somebody posts something on the blog, and you can quote me.com, we update the ebook, and everybody who ever got the ebook will eventually get an updated copy. So it's a groupthink in the best sense of the word.
It's a kind of an interesting modern concept where it's a cross between a book and a blog. In other words, it's a book you subscribe to. It's like a periodical. It's so funny how all the different platforms that we're used to are changing. While I have you, look, we're coming into the holiday season. I guess that's the umbrella term for it. We're certainly surrounded by enough Halloween stuff out there to know that it ain't the 4th of July anymore. People are trying to figure out ways to travel and shake off cabin fever. We're still kind of crawling out from the pandemic. And because so many people now work remotely, they can mix business and pleasure, and the holidays are here. What about tips for travelers? Have you unlocked any secrets that we can tap into to save money with travel?
Well, there's been so much frustration with air travel, delays and canceled flights, that many people, even despite what's gone on with gas prices, are thinking, I'm just going to drive there. If you are searching for airfares, it helps to be flexible. And if you're shopping for hotel rooms, of course, use the discounts you're entitled to. There may be a little drop-down box on the hotel reservation website or on Expedia or Priceline or wherever you use, where you can enter AARP or AAA or whatever else you're a member of. But here's a great website that somebody posted on the blog. It's resortfeechecker.com. And if you're a frequent traveler, you cringe at the expression, the mere mention of resort fee, because it's the unpleasant surprise you get at check-in where they're going to want another $40 or $50 per night for amenities, which you may not be using. If you travel with your own Wi-Fi hotspot, for instance, you're not going to need the hotel's Wi-Fi if you're not going to use the spa there. Ask at check-in if they can waive the resort fee based on your not using the amenities. But even before you book, check out resortfeechecker.com, and you may be able to avoid the conversation entirely.
Can people negotiate things like that with the person in the front counter in a hotel? Do they have, not every hotel is the same, but or even like at the airport, getting an upgrade. I guess the flight attendant is the person on the front line. Do these big corporations give their frontline employees the power to make those kinds of field decisions?
Manners matter, because all the people you just described, the gate agent at the airport, the flight attendant on board, the desk clerk at the hotel, these people are punching bags. And all they do is get hollered at by people who have a beef with them. I have a bone to pick. And when we travel, we're always not on top of our game. We're off our routine. We're not at our best. And if you are conspicuously nice and friendly to them, go ahead and ask as you're checking in at the hotel, for instance, any chance for an upgrade? Because that nicer room is otherwise going to sit there empty. And you were an oasis of kindness in a desert of bad manners with everybody else they have transacted with that day. So manners matter when you're asking for a little something extra. And if you don't ask, you won't get.
You're an observer of sociology and human nature, and we've been through tough times. We're having economic stress. There's been political stress. And, of course, we had the pandemic. Is it measurable to you, you know, you've been around a while and you observe things. Is it measurable to you the nature of people's politeness? You know, the caricature of a person, it's both female and male Karens. They call them male Karens now. Are people who work with the public facing a tougher time these days than, say, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago?
The new normal is neither. We as a people, as a society, and not just we Americans, this has been a worldwide pandemic. And humans have been knocked off balance by quarantine. A million Americans died from COVID. And we're now under stress because of inflation. And that's why I say manners matter, and you will be conspicuous if you just rise above it. You asked, is it measurable? Like I said, every time I'm on with you, I get new suggestions on the blog. And I think a lot of good is going to come of what we've been through, because maybe we did have it a little easy. Maybe this new frugality we've taken on is going to suit us well forever. We've had to cope with present circumstances, but I think we've become smarter shoppers, and I think that we have become more humble, and the help wanted sign is everywhere, not just because it's a seller's market for any occupation, not just because suddenly a million Americans were subtracted from the workforce, but that time at home we spent a couple of years ago, a lot of people went through a reassessment of what really matters. Look how many people did not want to return to the workplace. They're actually more productive at home, according to several studies I've read, and plus you can run a load of wash. So I think that this new normal is something we can wear well, but it's been a heck of a transition.
That's media consultant Holland Cook. The website to check out Inflation Hacks Saving Those Benjamins is andyoucanquoteme.com. Coming up next, a visit with Dr. Dahlia Wax in Las Vegas. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Although Americans in general have decided to declare the pandemic is over, COVID-19 is still an issue in the national conversation. Joining us is our medical correspondent in Las Vegas, Dr. Dahlia Wax, heard daily across the U.S. on the Genesis Communications Network. Well, Dr. Wax, we haven't had you on in a while, and part of that was because there hasn't been as much talk on news talk media about COVID as there had been in the past, but it stays on the survey because it has stayed in our consciousness because it still exists. I get the feeling that the general population has declared the pandemic is over. But what's really going on?
Well, what's really going on is a frustration, especially from a bunch of us medical professionals that have been concerned about the origins of COVID. We got the bombshell report today from the Senate saying that there is substantial evidence of an accident at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, or the research facility, and that the lab leak theory is pretty much the main theory now moving forward. And it's frustrated me as a physician, because since the beginning, I have said, look, we need to entertain the concept that this, similar to the original SARS, could have been leaked. And if so, maybe that'll help us kind of narrow down why we keep having these variants. And the American public is tired of these variants after variants, and vaccines and continual boosters. And so the sooner we get to the bottom of this, the sooner then we could even define if it's still a pandemic or not. It's ubiquitous, and it is pandemic, but is it new anymore? Or are we dealing with something, a beast that we're already kind of comfortable with? So it's a fascinating topic, and it's multifaceted, but I think the public has COVID fatigue, and now they're bracing themselves for flu, RSV, and another COVID wave.
For a while, it was considered politically incorrect. It was considered, in some cases, downright dangerous and destructive to proselytize the theory that it came from the Wuhan lab, because then it sort of indicated that it was man-made. And that brings up all kinds of other avenues of intrigue. But you would say that right now that's the general theory in the establishment, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Senate finally released a report, the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. And they believe that based on, quote unquote, the analysis of the publicly available information, it appears reasonable to conclude that the COVID pandemic was more likely than not the result of a research-related incident. And I had said from the beginning that it didn't have to be intentional. It could be a leak, an accident. It doesn't have to be like the Supreme Court leak. It could have been an accident. But that was labeled as misinformation. And I said any theory in science needs to, you know, people were wielding that misinformation label left and right. And here we are going, look, but as a physician, as an epidemiologist, we need to figure out where the source of this is coming from, and what are we doing wrong in that lab or other labs. We had to have a very difficult conversation when the Titanic sank, going, look, we didn't have enough lifeboats. And then we changed the way we did things. That wasn't misinformation. There weren't enough lifeboats. There being an issue with a lab back in 2002 with the original SARS, ruled by Singapore as a lab accident in China, and then it again happening in 2004, it was no wonder that there was possibly an issue this time around. But doctors were stopped spreading misinformation, and we're like, we just want that theory investigated. That's all we're asking.
So does the fact that there's variant after variant after variant somehow tied to the idea that this was artificially created, that this was designed to be a difficult thing and to have many different phases of attack?
So it's interesting, because when you have a virus in a lab setting, not only could it be tinkered with, you know, insipidously, but it could also just mutate on its own because it's in a very confined, non-natural space. I don't know if I'm convinced that China purposely tinkered with it and it was a bioweapon or it was for gain of function. But anytime you have a virus or viruses sitting there for years in a non-natural habitat with non-natural hosts, it does have the ability to mutate. And so here we're dealing with variant after variant. If there is a leak, and if there is a protocol in a lab that's haphazard, and as they're studying these new variants, it's getting leaked, somebody needs to realize, do you guys realize that your ventilation system is not working? That your zero gravity or all the different things they do in labs, you know, might not be working? That it does make us wonder if nobody addressed the problem head on 3 years ago, then that problem could still exist in labs who are studying the variants.
Now, what about the vaccines and the boosters? I keep hearing as I peruse, you know, the journals and the newspapers and the basic conversation, that there seems to be more and more and more opinion that that there is a bigger downside to the vaccines and the boosters than originally we were led to believe. What should we know about that?
Well, interestingly, yesterday a study came out saying that the new bivalent COVID vaccine, which I was a fan of, and I received, I got my bivalent vaccine, did not seem to have any additional benefit than the previous boosters. Well, what changed people's enthusiasm for the boosters and for the vaccines was the fact that they got COVID anyway. Even though I would argue that maybe their COVID was milder, when somebody got the vaccines, got the additional boosters, got over four doses, and they still got hit with Omicron, slapped one side of the buttocks down the other, many people are thinking, you know what, I don't think I need to, you know, inject myself as often. And it's because people think the vaccine is like the polio vaccine, the one and done. I love the fact that we got our polio series and I don't ever have to worry about, you know, old school polio. I might have to worry about new school polio, but I love that one and done. The COVID vaccine was never about that. But when we tried to convince people it could be like the flu vaccine once a year, again, we looked like we were incorrect on that, because every 5 months you needed a booster. So people are not used to this idea that you have to inject a booster every 5 months. And it's something that just isn't popular. It's against their human instincts. And they're like, if I'm going to get it anyway, I might as well get the natural booster from it. So it's tricky, especially for us in public health, because we understand people's concerns and reservations and not wanting to get any side effects to these vaccines. But we also understand that, you know, COVID is still out there and can still kill.
In conclusion, yes, it still can kill, but I get the impression that even though it's out there and a lot of people have gotten it and are getting it, that across the board, it's not as deadly statistically as it was when it first started. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. You know, fortunately, the last Omicron wave we got in the summer, and we didn't have a concomitant pneumonia, a concomitant flu that could exacerbate things. I am a little nervous going into this winter that COVID might be a little uglier, because we are seeing flu, and many people are not protected from pneumonia as well as they should. So we might see more COVID deaths, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to be COVID itself or just the fact that we have this trifecta of multiple illnesses that are bombarding our immune system.
That's our medical correspondent, Dr. Dahlia Wax of the Genesis Communications Network. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. We have time for one more. Halloween is coming up on Monday. It's one of the most commercial of all holidays celebrated in America. Lots of bucks changing hands. It's also a major annual boom for the horror film genre. Joining us now is legendary New England radio broadcaster who's also one of the nation's most colorful pop culture and entertainment historians, Brad Shepard of Pioneer Valley Radio in Springfield, Massachusetts. I would imagine, knowing what kind of a guy you are, what kind of kid you were, you probably have always been a fan of horror films.
Always. And I was weaned on the classic Universal horror films, which I don't think anything has come along in successive decades to replace or to diminish. The only thing that saddens me is that you have audiences over the decades that just will tune out anything that isn't in color, and these great films were black and white, and I would have hated to have seen them in color.
I think that the fact they were in black and white added to the nature, the character, the purity, if you will, of the genre. And when I was a kid, I used to watch the old Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, Lon Chaney Jr., you know, characters. There was a show in New York where I grew up hosted by John Zacherle, called Shock Theater, and he played the part of like a ghoul, and he talked like this, and he'd interject himself into the films. I love that whole thing, and even the TV show was in black and white in those days. I think it was the British films that started to make remakes of all of those characters. They were in color, and I didn't like them as much.
No, I didn't either, and what happened was that Universal, that owned all those great films, had a British subsidiary called Hammer. And Hammer decided that color was a good opportunity for them to take a different direction, and that is to show us eyeballs and blood and other organs and things like that, and to go for a more lurid take on these things, which, of course, captured everybody's imagination because it had never been really depicted in films prior to that. Mm-hmm. But I think something was lost, because the films that we talked about earlier, and you coined the phrase that I used to see in the TV Guide, never said a horror film, said a melodrama, which really is what they were. And they had a psychological edge. There was something deeply, deeply, mysterious and ethereal about them that was lost when we started seeing buckets of blood.
You said captured the imagination. Actually, I think the imagination was those earlier films with the weird music and the mist and the moon coming through and the bat. You see the shadow of the bat.
There's a genre line too, because so many of these films in that era that you and I both respond to were they were fantasy films, but also they were supernatural. Vampires and werewolves and mummies were supernatural. However, you lump the Frankenstein films, which were my favorites, into that. They were not supernatural. They were science fiction.
Yeah, they were. They really were. And it's a very interesting, interesting point. You talk about the Frankenstein monster. Because, we often call him Frankenstein, but of course, he was the monster of various succession of Frankensteins, doctors, barons, counts, I don't know. the canon was not always completely accurate, but that when the Frankenstein film first came out, I don't remember what year it was, but it came out back in the day.
31.
It terrified audiences. People, the sight of him with the scars and the head and that whole look. People, I always heard people, the older generation saying that they couldn't sleep. They had nightmares from that. And isn't it funny how the same character over years went from being a figure of terror to being one of comedy? I mean, culminating with Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Which really is one of the best films that holds up to this day. One of the better films that Bud and Lou made toward the nadir in their career. And the best blend of horror and comedy since, equaled only by the original Ghostbusters in my purview. But there is another element to this whole thing. And that is seeing those great creation sequences in the early Frankenstein films. You want to talk about what that did in that era? We're somewhere in Central Europe where maybe people are still using gas lanterns, and yet in the laboratory there are all of these fusions and lightning bolts shooting everywhere. You know?
Very imaginative.
Where did he get the power from? Where did he get the electricity from?
Well, he used lightning, you know?
Yes.
The thunderstorm. You know, he's alive. It's alive. Of course, you know, the hammer.
Another great point.
Yeah.
You made another. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you made another great point a moment ago, and I don't want to lose that. That we've had 90 years of that image of the Frankenstein monster being cartooned, comic books, Saturday morning cartoons, Fred Gwynn on the monsters and the whole thing. But you go back to when that image had never been seen before. And yes, it was like the Exorcist of its day. People ran screaming from the theater. One guy called the manager of the theater in New York where it played.
Really?
I think it was the Roxy. He called him. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. He got the manager's home phone, and the manager groggily answered the phone, and the guy said, "Listen, I can't sleep tonight because of that film, and you're not going to sleep either."
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
That's a true story.
That's my dear friend and longtime colleague, Brad Shepherd of Pioneer Valley Radio. You can check him out at pioneervalleyradio.com. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, October 24th through Friday, October 28th, 2022. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And don't forget my song Idiots with Gun Hill Road at idiotsvideo.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications, presented in association with Talk Media Network and Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved.